Text number 25. First we read in Sanskrit. Sahupavraja varadam prapanarti haram harim anugrahaya pakhanam anurupatma darshanam. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. He, meaning Lord Brahma, approached the personality of Godhead, who bestows all boons and who dispels the agony of his devotees, and whose, let's read the first one. The worshipful Brahma first laughs at their stupidity, but finding the shameless asuras close upon him, he grew indignant and ran in great haste out of fear. He approached the personality of Godhead who bestows all boons and who dispels the agony of his devotees and of those who take shelter of his lotus feet. He manifests innumerable transcendental forms to the satisfaction of his devotees. Purport. Hear the words Bhaktanam Anurupatma Darshanam means that the personality of Godhead manifests his multi forms according to the desires of the devotees. For example, Hanumanji, Vrajrangaji, wanted to see the form of the Lord as the personality of Godhead, Ramachandra. Whereas other Vaishnavas wanted to see the form of Radha Krishna, and still other devotees wanted to see the form the Lord in the form of Lakshmi Narayan. The Mayavadi philosophies think that although all these forms are assumed by the Lord, just as the devotees desire to see him, actually he is impersonal. From the Brahma Samhita, however, we can understand that this is not so, for the Lord has multi forms. It is said in the Brahma Samhita, Advaitam Achutam. The Lord does not appear before the devotee because of the Lord, devotee's imagination. Brahma Samhita further explains that the Lord has innumerable forms. Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishtan. He exists in millions of forms. There are 8,400,000 species of living entities, but the incarnations of the Lord are innumerable. In the Bhagavatam, it is stated that just as the waves of the sea cannot be counted, but appear and disappear continually, the incarnations and forms of the Lord are innumerable. A devotee is attached to a particular form, and it is that form that which he worships. We have just described the first appearance of the boar within this universe. There are innumerable universes, and somewhere or another, the boar form is now existent. All the forms of the Lord are eternal. It is the devotee's inclination to worship a particular form, and he engages in devotional service to that form. In a verse in the Ramayana, Hanuman, the great devotee of Ram, said, I know that there is no difference between the Sita Ram and Lakshmi Narayan, forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but nevertheless, the form of Ram and Sita have absorbed my affection and love. Therefore, I want to see the Lord in the form of Rama and Sita. Similarly, the Gaudiya Vaishnav loves the form of Radha and Krishna, and Krishna and Rukmini at Dwarka. The words Bhaktanam Anurupatma Darshanam mean that the Lord is always pleased to favor the devotee in the particular form in which the devotee wants to worship and render service unto him. In this verse it is stated that Brahma approached Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This form of the Lord is Shiradaka Shayi Vishnu. Whenever there is some trouble and Brahma has to approach the Lord, he can approach Shiradaka Shayi Vishnu. And is the grace of the Lord that whenever Brahma approaches about disturbances in the universe, the Lord gives him relief in so many ways. So Uparaja Varadam Prapanarti Haram Harim Anugrahaya Bhaktanam Anurupatma Darshanam. He approached the personality of Godhead who bestows all boons and who dispels the agony of his devotees and of those who take shelter of his lotus feet. He manifests his innumerable transcendental forms to the satisfaction of his devotees. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Purustai Bhutai Srimati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatundeve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shindivadi Paskatya De Satarna. This explains about part of our Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. The knowledge is generally divided into two sections. One is the difference between the soul, ourselves, and our bodies. And the other is about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without understanding about ourselves as being a spiritual soul, it's very difficult for understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, being the source of everything, is the original and supreme soul. Just like we are persons, we have our individual identities, we have our likes and dislikes. Therefore, the source where we come from and which everything comes from must have the same qualities that we have. Otherwise, how did we get our qualities? For instance, just like we're a person, so our parents are persons. We can't say, I'm a person, but my parents are impersonal. Nowadays, for instance, they have a philosophy called Darwinism, I guess they call it. That all of us have descended from monkeys. You've heard that philosophy somewhere? Yes. But whether that philosophy is logical and reasonable, that's questionable. For instance, if we descended from monkeys, just to give an analogy, that means that somewhere along in our heritage, there must be a monkey in our family line. If you look through your family album, through your family tree, that means that if you trace your great-great-grandfather or great-great-grandmother back far enough, you'll find that someone looks almost like a monkey. And if you go further and further back, they may be the missing link or they may be some link, but if you keep on going far enough back, eventually you'll find someone very hairy and a big smile on their face. And they're swinging through a tree. And that's your great-great-great-great, so many back, grandmother or father. Has anyone ever noticed that in their family tree? This is, you know, grandfather, he was a general in the army, and this is, you know, great-great-grandmother, she was a scientist, and here's great-great-great-great-grandfather, he's swinging through a tree. And then if you trace that monkey's ancestry far enough back, then somewhere along the line we should find that one of his ancestors was a mouse. And if we keep on going back far enough, then eventually we'll come back to a rock. So according to this Darwinian theory, two rocks, they met each other, they fell in love, they produced a mouse that later on gave birth to a monkey, which was swinging from one of our branches in our family tree. But this is not very logical, as we can understand that our parents, they're persons, so the original parents must also be persons. How can they not be persons? And Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he explains that the original persons, they're spiritual persons, the source of everything, just because we're spirit. When we see light, we understand that light has two qualities. One of them is heat, and the other is light. The sun, for instance, is emanating so much heat and light. If we go to the sun planet, we should also expect that the source of the heat and light that we're experiencing on this planet, there must be heat and light on the sun planet. Not that we go to the sun planet, we need a big flashlight to find ourselves around. Or we have to bring our winter jackets when we go to the sun planet. No, we can understand the sun planet must have more heat and more light than even we're experiencing here. So similarly, if we're life, then the original source of where we're coming from must also be life. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains how we're life. He says in Sanskrit, Deno smita dehe komaram yovanam jara tata dhantara prapir viryas tatra namuyati. He gives us an analogy which we can all identify with. If we use our intelligence, we can see that our bodies are changing. It shouldn't be very difficult to see that we have a different body now than when we were 5 years old. And similarly, in the course of time, we'll be 20, 30, 40, 50, if we stay in the same body, we'll be the same person who's aware of the body, but the body will always be different. At every moment, factually speaking, the body is changing, but we, the person within the body, who are conscious of the body, we're always the same person. So what we're conscious of is changing, not only the gross material body, but also the subtle body is changing too. Because we have different mentalities, and sometimes we have different personalities. But the person who's aware of these mentalities, and these personalities, and these different physical forms, is always the same person. Otherwise, if you walked in here and you were called Peter, it's not that you walk out here and you're now called John, because you've changed. No, we're always the same person. Our body that we're identified with is different, but the person who's identifying with the body is always the same. But currently we're under what's called Maya. Maya means that which is not, namely we're identifying ourselves with this body, which is not beyond our normal experience. For instance, at night we go to sleep, and if we remember our dreams, we usually are in a different body. We may even take the body of a bat or a bird. We may be a great king or a queen. We may be a sweeper on the street. But although the body is completely different that we're identified with, but we're still the same person having the dream. And then when we wake up, then we identify with ourselves with this body. The only difference is that this dream may last longer than our night dream. But otherwise, it's the same principle. We're simply in a type of dream. So Krishna consciousness means to wake up to find out who we actually are, who the dreamer is, who the perceiver is, who the person is conscious of all these different states of being, material existences. And here in this Vedic literature is an explanation that the Supreme Person from which everything is coming from, who is the Supreme Person, is an extraordinary person. He's not just like another person like we are. He's called Bhagavan. Bhag means opulence and van means one who possesses. So he's called the Supreme Person because he possesses all opulence. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashashastriyaha Jnana vairagyas chaiva shana bhagahi tinganaha. In Sanskrit it said Aishvarya. Aishvarya means opulence. Aishvaryasya samagrasya. Sama means complete. He has complete wealth. Someone here may have some money, and someone in the city of Septon or Duvwi probably has more money than any of us here. But in Belgium, there may be the richest person, but we can go further and further until we find the richest person on this planet, or perhaps in this universe. But no one here can claim that they have all the wealth. But samagrasya means that God, He owns everything, not only in this universe, but even what's beyond this universe. Therefore, He has complete opulence, complete wealth. And virya means strength. Strength means that someone may be strong, but someone else may be stronger, but God is the strongest. And as explains here also in the verse, one of the ways we can see how strong God is, is that He's moving all the planets in their orbit exactly on time. And the Bhagavad Gita says, Gama Visha Chabhutani Daryamaham Ojasa Kushnami Tosadi Sarva Samobhutvara Satnikaha, which means Krishna says, I enter into the planets, and by my energy they stay in their orbits. Yet Chaksha Esha Savita Sakala Grahanam Rajas Tamasta Suramurti Ashesha Teja Yasya Gaya Brahmiti Samvita Kala Chakro Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. So this means the most intelligent person in the universe, which is that person who Brahma is being talked about in this particular verse, Lord Brahma, he's praying in a book called the Brahma Samhita that I worship Govinda or Krishna, the primeval Lord. Why is he worshiping him? One reason is that the sun that we see sometimes in Belgium, not very often, that the sun, which is full of infinite effulgence, is one of his energies. The sun, which is so powerful that according to the scientists, that at every moment it's putting forth so much heat and light that the whole universe is lit up. And then at one moment it's emanating more heat and light than all of human society has used since its history. The sun, which is so powerful, somehow or another, is exactly in an orbit. Every day we wake up and we can be assured that the sun will rise at some specific time. It is not that one day we wake up and we find out the sun didn't wake up on time. It just was asleep. It slept in today. And therefore, it didn't rise. No, we may not get up in the morning so early sometimes. But the sun every day gets up exactly on time. In India, sometimes they take a bull, or in other countries like that, and they attach to the nose of the bull, they attach a long rope and they tie it to a pole. And then they strap a very heavy weight to the bull, and the bull walks around in a circle, and with that very heavy weight, it crushes grain. Although the bull is so powerful that it would take 50 strong men to pull an equal amount of weight, but although it is so strong, it cannot move 1 inch beyond the rope. Similarly, although the sun is full of infinite effulgence, it cannot move 1 inch outside of its orbit. It is said that the sun, or the earth, went a little bit closer to the sun, then everything would burn up. You could take your bread and just throw it on the street and it would bake. You just put the dough out in the street and all of a sudden you get a loaf of bread. And if it moved a little further away, everything would freeze. The whole earth would become one big refrigerator. But, although the sun is so powerful and supposedly we're moving in such a fast orbit around the sun, but still, it is always remaining the exact amount of distance between the sun and the earth, without any variation since, at least, our history says. So the question is, what is the force that's maintaining such a huge amount of fire floating in an orbit exactly on time? We don't find that there's any big thumbtack keeping the sun in its place. We find none of that. It requires intelligence, just like a watch. Here we have a watch. Many of us may have watches. And the watch is made by intelligent scientists, manufacturers. And what are they trying to do? They're trying to manufacture an instrument that simply tries to duplicate or measure the movements of the sun. however imperfectly it does it, but it requires intelligent people to manufacture. It is not that you walk down the street and by accident, somehow or another, the material nature creates a watch and you just pick it up. Wow, look at that. That's a new watch. Wonder what's on the next block. If we see a watch, then we understand that someone has manufactured it. So what to speak of the big watch called the universe, which is much more accurate than our little watches? Then we can understand there must be a person who's manufactured it. Although not an ordinary person, but a super person who has super intelligence to manufacture a super watch. So that super person is called Govinda or Krishna. Of course, with our little brains, we immediately become thinking, how is it possible that anyone can have such a big intelligence and so much power? I don't have that power, so why should he have it? It's not fair. It's not democratic. Maybe we should vote him out of office. Otherwise, he'll become proud. Somehow or another, the way the universe works is not a democratic process. Although God is so powerful that he's created universes and is maintaining them and all the things within it, he didn't get elected somehow or another. He just happens to have that amount of power and energy. You can't blame it on him. But that's the way things are. And unfortunately, modern society, people don't like sometimes the way things are, and they think by their democratic system they can change the laws of the universe. But by our democratic system, we can't change any laws of the universe. We can't vote the sun coming up in the morning. We can't vote that the sun should just stay down. We fire the sun and we'll get our own heat and light. We've got another company. No, we have to accept the universal arrangement. Just like the scientists, they claim they're going to control the universe in the future, or at least some part of it. But ask any scientist whether they can change the fact that their body is changing. Can any scientist, do they have a formula by which they grow younger every day? Or even keep the same age? To some scientist, he came up and he said, well, I like how old I am. I'm not going to change anymore. No, even the scientists, with all their talk about how they're going to invent a pill, we're going to take it, live forever, they themselves are going to leave their bodies soon. Their bodies can't help but keep on going, growing older. So the question is, behind this earth, behind this energy that we see, earth, water, fire, air, intelligence, whatever else we may perceive, there's another energy which is within our experience called time. And although time is changing everything in this universe, we don't find that time is changing. It's not that you wake up one day and you read the newspaper and you find that time died. It got old, it's been around for so long, and time died, so nothing's changing anymore. Although time is changing everything, but one thing is certain, that time is not changing. Therefore, even if we don't perceive the personality of Godhead directly, we can perceive him through his energy of time, which is changing everything, and which we cannot control whatsoever. No one has any formula whatsoever to influence, exert any change on time. Therefore, we have to conclude that we ourselves are not the supreme within the universe, and we are being controlled by higher forces and energies of which time is the most obvious that is beyond our comprehension how it's working, because although it's changing everything, in itself does not change at all. And time is working with some intelligence. Therefore, where we have intelligence, there must be a person, because people, they have intelligence, dead material energies, or energies don't have intelligence. And that intelligence is way beyond our capacity. For instance, we may be able to manufacture different vehicles, like we can manufacture cars and airplanes, But can we manufacture a vehicle that comes in a male and female form? Just imagine if you could create a male Rolls Royce and a female Rolls Royce. And when you get them together, you get little Rolls Royces. And if you feed them with gasoline and oil, they gradually grow up and you get big Rolls Royces. That way everyone can get their own Rolls Royce. You know Rolls Royces? Car, yeah. That way everyone can very easily get a Rolls Royce. Or if you can get whatever we want, female IBM and a male IBM, they create little IBMs. Some faster and some slower. But God has done that in every species of life. He's created male forms, male machines, and female machines, and they create little machines that grow up and create other machines. So who can duplicate the prowess of the Supreme Person? Just like if we could create a machine, you put one end, you put grass in, and the other end, you get milk. If a scientist could do that, certainly they'd win some prize for it. But God has created that machine already. It's called a cow. He puts one end, you put grass, the other end, you get milk. Unfortunately, they don't give God the credit, nor do they give the cow any credit. Although it's such a wonderful creation. So that's only due, as Krishna says, asatyam apratishtam te jagato horan ishram aparashparam sambhujyam kimanyat kama hai dukam. The modern society, sometimes the learned professors or teachers within society, they say that the world is unreal, it has no foundation, it has no God in control, it is produced of sex desire, and has no other cause than lust. In other words, they've concluded that everything somehow or another has come about by accident. Now the question is whether they actually believe that everything came about by accident. Such a big universe as we're living in is just one big accident. There is one scientist, his name was Sir Isaac Newton, who originally came up with certain laws, like he was sitting there one day underneath a tree looking at an apple and it fell and hit him on the head. So he concluded there must be a law called gravity. Otherwise it was one of his enemies on the tree threw the apple down, hit him on the head. But he didn't see his enemy, so he concluded that when the apple falls, there's a law called gravity that hits him on the head with it. But one day, because Sir Isaac Newton didn't believe that things came about accidentally, he had created a model of the universe with planets moving their orbits. And one of his friends was an atheist. He came into the room and asked Sir Isaac Newton, who has created this nice model of the universe? So Sir Isaac Newton said, I don't know. I just walked in here. And suddenly, I heard this bang. And out of nowhere, this model appeared. So his friend said, oh, come on. Tell me who actually created the model. I mean, you're not intoxicated, are you? He said, no, I just walked in here. And suddenly, I heard this big bang. And out of nowhere, this model disappeared. So he said, oh, come on, tell me, So he said, no, why do you find it so strange? According to you, the whole universe came about by that, in that way. So why is it so inconceivable that one little model of the universe couldn't come about in the same way? So the scientists, they say, is by accident, but they have no experience in such an accident. As a matter of fact, the scientists, they don't stay at home and do nothing. And someone comes and says, my dear student, aren't you trying to get your PhD? And they say, well, according to our philosophy, that everything comes about by accident. So maybe by accident I'll get my PhD degree. Well, why don't you go and at least work? No, I don't really need to work. Maybe by accident I'll become rich. I'll just sit here and by accident I'll become rich. So though the scientists, they say, or others say that things come about accidentally, but to get what they want, to do something, accomplish something in this world, they have to make so much endeavor. So similarly, we see wonderful creations, we have to understand that there are wonderful creators or creator, there's a wonderful creator behind things. If someone walked in here and saw a very beautiful painting, just like this painting of Krishna with his cowherd boyfriends, and someone said, "Who painted it?" And we said, "I don't know, we just walked in here and just, it was just painted. We just worshipped the accident. The accident, Mr. Accident painted it." No, we understand there must be a painting. A wonderful painter if there is a wonderful painting. Accidents don't get a big name and sell big paintings. Paintings such as Picasso, Michelangelo, they get a lot of money for their paintings, not because Mr. Accident painted it, but because there was a wonderful painter behind it. Because the universe is a wonderful creation, we must understand that there's a wonderful creator behind it. Who that creator is, we may not know, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't exist, just because we may not know who it is. If you walk into a department store, and if you don't see the owner of the department store, you can't conclude that there's no owner and I can take whatever I want, therefore. I'm free to do whatever I want here, because I can't see the owner. And even if you don't meet the owner personally, if you take enough things, then the owner's police will come and arrest you. You say, "Well, I don't see any owner. Therefore, there can't be any owner behind it because I don't see him. And therefore, you're arresting me unfairly." No, we can understand if there is a nicely organized department store, there are persons who organize it, who own it. Similarly, in the universe, if we see things are nicely organized, we may not agree or we may not perceive that there's an owner, but if we act as if there is no owner, then we get arrested by Krishna's Maya. So that Maya is the reason why we're misidentifying ourselves with these bodies, because we're not acting in harmony with the supreme owner. Instead, we're claiming ourselves to be the proprietors of different parts of the supreme owner's creation. Therefore, we're thinking we're Belgian or American or Russian or whatever kind of nationality. We think that this is my land or our land. This belongs to us. We don't acknowledge that it belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, all of us are arrested by illusion and misidentifying ourselves with these gross and subtle material bodies. And under this illusion, we're forming alliances or different types of organizations in relationship to other people, similarly in illusion, and therefore we have collective illusions. And especially in modern society, where they've divided the land up amongst themselves and they're fighting over it, just like they're claiming that this Iraq, or we have to fight against Iraq, and because they're trying to take over Belgium, so we have to take over Iraq, and America is afraid that this country is going to take them over. But this is all a misconception. That even the birds, they don't have a similar misconception that we have. Just like a bird flies in here from Russia, we don't find that the Belgian birds stop him at the border, asking him for a visa and a passport, telling him that there's not enough trees in Belgium, fly back to Russia. That even the birds are not in such a conception of life that we have. Although they may not be in a very high conception, but at least they don't have this false national conception. So Krishna consciousness is not only to acknowledge that we are souls, but to acknowledge the fact that we all have one Father, who is the owner of everything, and that everything here is actually meant for the, to be utilized under the direction of that Supreme Father. And when we're in harmony with those directions, then we get our maximum benefit. And one of our benefits is that we become aware of ourselves as eternal persons, our consciousness, our awareness increases, and we feel relief from all the unhappiness of our present state of existence. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which we're reading from, that Supreme Personality is explained in his different relationships with his persons who are not under a material concept of life, who are liberated from all conceptions of materialistic life and are acting in harmony with him, what those relationships are like. And it explains here that God is not impersonal, he's not insensitive, he's the most expert in dealing in relationships. As he has supreme intelligence, so he can relate to people in a loving way with supreme expertise. And this is explained in this particular book, Srimad Bhagavatam, how he relates and how we ourselves can revive our personal relationship with that Supreme Person and therefore get the maximum benefit out of life. So, although it's not possible to explain very much about this book or even about this verse, but I just, in my humble way, try to explain whatever I could. So then we'll just ask you if you have any questions. Do I have any questions? Or we'll have 1 minute of silence. Yeah.
You said about the shop that we go and there is no owner.
Yes.
But what about if we see that our father, that he's God, is the owner, so then can we...
Steal from him.
If the father is the owner of the shop...
So just like in your house, say your father has a wallet lying on his desk. And you think, well, it's my father, so it's my wallet. Everything, there's no difference between myself and the father, so let me take his wallet, spend it in whatever I want. That may not be appreciated. Just like one time when spiritual teacher had many disciples. So he was visiting them, and when he arrived at the airport, they picked him up in a big limousine. So he said, oh, very nice. Where did the limousine came from? So the student said, oh, it's all by your mercy. Then he arrived back in the temple they had, and they found out the temple was huge. It was just renovated, and there was gold everywhere, and so many decorations. He said, how did this come about? And he said, oh, it's all by your mercy. Then he got into his department, and they had a big feast, and everyone was invited. And he said, where did you get all this money for all this big feast? And they said, oh, it's all by your mercy. Then he asked for his bank account to find out how much money he had left in the bank. And he found he had nothing. He said, what happened to my money? He said, oh, it was all your mercy. You may not appreciate it. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaur Premanand.